Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from the Mid-Alt that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up. Hi, I'm Annabelle and I'm absolutely fine. And yesterday I went for my first walk in about 3 weeks because of all the fuckery. I had about 3 weeks of isolation. So it was a highlight. It was a highlight to go for a walk. I was delighted. And so I was just crossing the road to go into the park, and I somehow managed to turn my ankle, and I flew into the middle of the road to be narrowly avoided by a van and was sort of rescued and hauled up by a couple of nice ladies. But I was a bit too sort of frazzled to say thank you. So now I've sprained my ankle, might be fractured, who knows? Am I going to go to the doctor? No, think it's sprained. And I have a limp to add to all the other humiliations. So,
oh my God.
You know, oh my God, does that bearded woman have a limp? Or am I seeing things?
With the ashes of her dead cat that she's carrying around.
Yes, Barry's ashes loom large.
You've had a hell of a, I'm sorry, I know we're not supposed to say that, but I do think you've had a hell of a few months.
Hard to catch a break, Em.
Or is it just life and that's shit? Sorry. Anyway, on that note, I'm absolutely fine, but I've got something called HOGO, which is the horror of going out. It's official. I no longer have FOMO, which I suppose is a relief, but I actually...
So you don't even care that you're missing something?
Don't even care that I'm missing anything.
A relief, also perhaps a worry?
Yes, that's what I mean.
You're taking yourself out of the game.
Refusal to engage with anything. I just want to watch Schitt's Creek, which I've already watched twice. I think it's just...
It's impossible to engage with anything meaningful, which is why we have no idea what's going on, right?
Thank goodness our next guest is here. He is an old friend with a brilliant brain, which is a good thing at this stage in the game because we are tired and haven't got a clue. Hugo Rifkind is the hugely popular Times columnist, writing polemics and the famously hilarious diary of the week of someone who is having a particularly spicy time. His weekly Times radio slot is a canter through the news and culture of the week. So thank God he is here to tell us what we need to know. Oh, and let's not even talk about his fights on Twitter. Anyway, Hugo is here to give us his top political moments of the year. How are you, Hugo?
I'm absolutely fine, although my dog is insane. Which is the main problem in my life. My dog is, he's always been insane. He's getting more insane. He barks at... Can I swear on this podcast?
Please do.
Oh my God, please.
Fine.
Really.
He barks at weird shit. So when you go for a walk and there's some weird shit happening, he goes quite... That weird shit might be somebody doing yoga. He doesn't like that at all. Once there was a man on a unicycle, he went fucking nuts. But recently, weird shit has expanded to include sad people.
So if somebody
in the park is sad, my God, he doesn't like that. And also, we planted a new tree in our back garden, and it turns out the new tree is weird shit. So he will go out in the morning and he will stand in the lawn, basically in dog language, going, "What the fuck? There's a tree!"
And oh my God, this tree is still here.
Yeah, dude, there's a tree. Oh my God, you know. And I'm hoping it calms down. Yes,
so he's constantly outraged and staring when he shouldn't stare.
He's generally just unpredictably belligerent. He's not a dangerous dog. He's never bitten anybody. He's just really cross. Really cross.
Either that or shit is fucking weird and he's having a perfectly normal response.
He's
but
just
we are
saying
not
what
doing
we all
it.
Think.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
When I see someone on a unicycle in the park, I would like to sort of bark at them too. So, what are you doing? Get down. That's mental. You know? So,
stop showing off.
Yeah. Why are you doing yoga outside in front of us, shaming us with your bendy bottom? Go away. So actually I think your dog is very sensible. Although the tree thing is going to be slightly... That's going to be slightly stressful.
It's going to be quite unrelaxing, isn't it?
I'm hoping he gets over it. I mean, it can't continue
being a surprising
tree. But the
tree will grow, and it will, because it will get leaves, then the leaves will fall off. What the fuck? So, Hugo, what a year. What a year. And there are you on the front line of reporting and documenting and observing the whole shit show.
Yeah, we're basically asking you to do a kind of news quiz for us, except for you can't ask us any questions because we have no idea.
Because hopes
on.
Were high, weren't they? 2021 was going to be better than 2020.
Well, it was, sort of. I mean, it was, the first half was fairly bleak and the second half was entirely lacking in optimism, but there wasn't like the kind of existential despair, you know. There was just, it was just kind of, it was sort of 70% life rather than 100% life. I know you've got 5% life, and maybe that's all you're ever getting.
And
you know,
actually, if you're feeling a bit tired, generally 70% life can meet most of your needs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. So I think it's not been I don't think it's been a terrible year, but I mean, the point is, it's a decent enough year as long as next year is better. If next year isn't better, then it's kind of like, ugh.
But I mean, you know, for a lot of us, you know, COVID, it's been quite easy to ignore what's been going on politically. I mean, my God.
Yes, it's been, because you've always got COVID politically, but you can't just have politics about COVID. You need to have politics about other stuff too. So everybody's been behaving really quite strangely, I would say.
Imagine what your dog would have to say.
Yes. My dog would make for an excellent political journalist.
Can you imagine just in the lobby barking at all the weird shit constantly?
Yeah. Well, so what I've done for you guys is I've basically prepared for you a list of my favourite political stories of the year, right?
Fabulous.
They're not the most important ones. In fact, one might almost say they're the least important ones. But they are nonetheless my favourite, and I feel they deserve greater discussion.
We may have reached saturation with some of the most important ones, so this is going to be sweet relief.
Otherwise, we can just talk about the time we had COVID.
And Brexit.
Yes, exactly.
So that's it.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, everyone knows them, but the most important ones, and there's nowhere to go with them, and it's like nobody cares. The least important ones, however, deserve to be remembered.
What is your first favourite least important political moment of this year?
You heard it here first.
My first favourite. These aren't chronological; they're just in random order, but nonetheless, my first one. We were talking about dogs. My first favourite story was when Boris Johnson had to admit that Dylan the dog had a problem with exercising his romantic urges on people's legs, right? What I loved about this story, apart from everything, was clearly this is a problem with the Johnson clan generally, not just the dog.
You said it.
Apple tree, exactly.
And B, the problem had been solved within 2 days because they chopped his balls off. And you kind of think...
There's a lesson to be learned.
Well, why stop there? But don't you just love the idea of there's a dog in Downing? I mean, whose legs has he humped?
Yes, you know? Imagine.
But also, yeah. I love the idea of people having to not make the connection constantly. As in, they're sitting there going, gosh, Dylan Johnson's humping my leg again. And everybody like sits there and goes, don't say it.
Who trained this animal?
Don't say it. Yes.
Or someone going to carry, like, well, you know, you could have his balls off. And hope whose balls off? But whose legs is he humping? Like, I mean, I don't know. I have a wonderful vision of him humping Jacob Rees-Mogg's leg.
It was my first thought. Obviously.
It's the first leg you think of. Yeah,
it is, definitely.
Well, he pretends not to notice, you know.
Yes, because he's grown up with, you know, Nanny telling him to ignore all humping dogs, which I'm sure there were
all
many.
All humping.
Nothing to see here, dear. No one's looking at you. Ignore the humping.
He's, and I don't really want to think about this too much, also a fairly prolific humper. I mean, not by Johnson.
Yes, Sixtus is proof of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's not allowed to have his balls off for religious reasons. I think that's how it works. So, it's much more complicated.
Who do you think was the peak person? The leg that Dylan humped that caused the chop? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe the Queen?
The thing I wasn't going to say, has he humped the Queen's legs? But I mean, she'd be used to it too.
Yeah, you'd think, yes. I bet she's got a good kick to you know.
Maybe that's why she wears those sturdy shoes. It's nothing to do with the walking. It's just
yes, because those corgis are really quite lumpy. They're weighty little motherfuckers, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean they're hard to get off your foot, I suppose. But they're not going to get very high up the knee.
So number one, Dylan the humping Downing Street dog.
Yes. Okay. Do you want number two?
Yes, please.
Number two. Speaking of people who should have their balls chopped off, Matt Hancock. Matt Hancock's resignation.
Oh God.
Now it was a big story. But it was also a ridiculous story. It's like it's the dream. It's got both, right? What I love, when we will forget this, because everyone will be like, "Oh yeah, he had to resign because he had an affair." No, he had to resign for breaching social distancing guidance, right? So the problem wasn't that he was kind of caught on camera and seen by the world, kind of grinding against his girlfriend at the back of a door. The problem was that he was just too close to her.
So it's a very, very unsexy reason to resign,
Unsexy. I mean, obviously, it was like, I mean, there's not many things less sexy than the video of him doing
Do you know what? I don't think any of us would look great if we were caught on CCTV doing that.
What, doing a, having a lunge?
Yes, having a squirm and a grope and a grind.
Yeah,
yes, thankfully that's not going to happen.
But yes, but Matt Hancock is not the dream, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, he all but kind of sort of breathes on his hands and rubs them together beforehand in a kind of, you know, it's kind of, And I guess the worst thing, the worst slash best thing about all that was he did resign, but he sort of seemed kind of proud about the whole thing.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I think you get that with late starters.
No, I agree. He definitely was the sort of Hancock of the walk kind of attitude, wasn't it? It was very much like, yeah, well, you know, lost
clues
my job.
In the name, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Had an affair, but have you seen her? You know, it was kind of, Yeah. But he,
Isn't
yeah,
he so writing a book?
Oh, God, he must be.
He was planning his tell-all book. Who would buy that book?
Well, I guess he, I mean, I guess his experience, I mean, he was the health secretary in the first, you know, the, in the majority of the pandemic. He was in a fairly, you know, central role in terms of having to lie about how many masks there were and stuff, you know.
Yes.
Someone had to do that job.
And he even made that look boring.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's sort of, it's a remarkable story, actually politically story, because he was really at the heart of government, right at the top of government. And then the next day he was just gone, you know, which of course leads to sort of the conspiracy theories about it. But I just don't even see how that works.
What are the conspiracy theories about
it? Well, that somebody somewhere wanted to get rid of him because of his good and or bad handling of the COVID pandemic. It depends on which side of the mad fence you sit, really.
But they had many ways into that, didn't they? If someone wanted to get rid of him, did they have to film him groping his mistress?
Well, if you're the prime minister, you can just sack him. It's fine. You can do what you want. So I don't think so. But it was the way that there was a camera on the roof of his office, which had literally always been there. Oh. Always been there. Been there like forever, for as long as he'd been there, which he'd A, never noticed, and B, decided to stand right in front of to have an affair, which is just, I mean, there's
You could almost think that he wanted us to know.
Well, I wonder, that would have been an interesting conversation. Do you think that Dylan was in the conversation? Boris and Dylan sitting there going,
He's one of us, guys.
So I'm really sorry. Dylan is humping his leg.
Do you think it made Boris like him slightly more?
Oh, I don't
sorry,
know.
Mate, got to do this, but I see your point.
Yeah, exactly.
Finally, a man he can understand. Yes. Dear me. Do you want another one?
Yes.
Okay. Rishi Sunak visiting a school, speaking to, I can't remember when this was, I think it was about June or July, speaking to a couple of kids, and he was talking about his various problems, and he said to them, I'm a coke addict. A total coke addict. Remember this?
No.
He said, I'm a total coke addict. And they looked at him like, what the fuck, Chancellor of Exchequer? And he said, and you could see him panic. And he said, this is all on film, Coca-Cola addict. Just for the record, to be clear, I'm a Coca-Cola addict. I have 7 fillings. And these two boys are staring at him like in kind of like, this is a weird conversation. And then he's going, the best stuff is from Mexico. And they're going, what the hell are you saying now?
Oh my God.
And he's going, it's the only place where they make it with the right kind of sugar or corn syrup or something. Mexican Coke. Yes, I love Mexican Coke. And these two boys are just kind of going, you know, just mouth agape. And Rishi Sunak, you can sort of see the whole kind of him going, this is a ridiculous disaster for a politician to be embroiled in, but it's the precise sort of ridiculous that it's going to get on the news at 10. I'm in trouble here. And indeed it did.
But how extraordinarily innocent of him to say that. I mean, how removed is he to say, I'm a coke addict 3 times, the best stuff is from Mexico, by the way?
He was trying to make it better by going into the Mexico digression. It's like, no, dude, this just gets worse and worse.
I agree. He sounds...
And also, he was trying to be down with the kids by talking about coke in the first place. And it's just a great big disaster, which shows me how rarefied he is.
Yeah.
Is this available on YouTube? And I will put this in the show notes, guys.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure it is. I haven't seen it for a few months, but absolutely, I'm sure it is on it is on YouTube.
Because that's really funny. But I agree, Annabelle. It sounds like you wouldn't make that mistake if you were a genuine coke addict. And you certainly wouldn't.
Or someone who had ordinary conversations with ordinary people a lot of the time. Which is, you know, anybody who had any friends or, you know, I find it really, really bizarre. It's like he's just landed from another billionaire planet and started talking about Mexican coke. Well, I mean, well done him.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it was sort of memorable. But it did, I mean, it does, you know, people talk about Rishi Sunak as the coming man, the obvious next prime minister. This, as you say, does give a flash into a a certain unworldliness there.
I mean,
maybe
Boris might be very, knows yeah. Boris knows his Coke from his Coke, I'm sure. And you know, even if he is an old Etonian, Jacob Rees-Mogg, I'm not so sure.
Yeah,
I think he's probably never seen either.
Never seen either. He's absolutely right. Or he might drink it in a little, you know, have it put on his table in a little metal jug, a little pewter. He'll drink it out of pewter or crystal. Yes.
I also love the idea of Coke being the entryway to children. It's like, let's talk about really terrible for you soft drink that hopefully your parents will have.
He's whispered to an aide before he went on. What do children like?
And what are they doing these days?
Coke. They like Coke. And he's off.
He likes Yorkshire tea, though.
Does he?
Yes.
No, that's just he whispered to an aide when he visited Yorkshire.
Rishi.
What did they like? And the aide said, Yorkshire tea. And it just worked better saying, I love Yorkshire tea, than it did saying, I love Coke.
He famously said that he only drank Yorkshire tea, and Yorkshire tea sales went up, like, massively.
This probably got shares.
Didn't he have that? He had that special, like, sort of coffee mug thing that he was photographed with. Remember this? It was like some sort of USB coffee mug that you plug in that keeps your coffee and or tea at exactly the right temperature forever. That he was like sipping from it when he wrote his budget in his hoodie photo shoot, and someone figured out that it was a mug that cost 700 quid or something.
That could reheat its own contents.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and sort of.
Oh,
you know,
my God, that is such classic billionaire stuff, isn't it? It's like, what do you get? The billionaire has everything. A mug that will keep the contents of it at exactly optimum temperature at all
like,
times.
It's so innovations catalogue. You know, it's just like, come on. Yeah.
A stocking filler.
Yes, exactly.
But also, it sort of slightly makes me hate him. It's like, either drink your coffee or leave your coffee. It's like he's the type of man who eats a third of a Mars bar and then pops it in the fridge.
Yeah. I mean, I have sitting right next to me now really stone cold coffee, which I am guaranteed to drink before lunchtime.
Yes.
Because the alternative is standing up and walking over to the sink, and that's not going to happen. Yeah. So,
and you might have a mug of stone cold tea that you left somewhere on the way as well, exactly, yeah, which you've forgotten to drink because you're so fucking busy. And that's just how it goes.
So just slurp as you go.
Yeah.
Or in fact, actually, but I mean, you know, we could, you know, if anyone wants to get Hugo a Christmas present, Fran, Hugo's wife, if you're listening, he would like a rechargeable, reheating coffee mug, please.
I'd like a £7,000 mug, please. And some Mexican Coke. Yes.
What a night that will be.
Yeah. Oh my God, can you imagine? Then you really would be a mug. Anyway.
What's next on your list, Hugo?
What's next? Okay, Priti Patel.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Okay, serious question. How many times have you been out recently? Actually, you know, scratch that. How many times have you woken up the day you were supposed to go out and felt flooded with dread? How long have you spent praying that the other person will cancel so you don't have to?
And yet, just as we're avoiding people, so many of us feel really lonely and more tired than ever, particularly now the days are getting a bit longer and you think, how am I going to have the energy to go out into the world?
Our social batteries are very flat at the moment, and that can make us feel isolated, which can lead to trouble. And in my experience, therapy has helped me track my best energy sources and helped me better identify what leaves me feeling depleted.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try?
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch anytime for no additional charge.
With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/midult. That's betterhelp.com/midult.
BetterHelp. Because sometimes the best thing to do is acknowledge that we are not, in fact, absolutely fine.
Priti Patel, bullying, right?
Oh.
So last year, this is a 2020 story rather than a 2021 story. The senior civil servant at the Home Office, Sir Philip Rutnam, resigned and accused her of bullying and took her to court. And Priti Patel was investigated by the Standards-y people and was found totally to have bullied him, whereupon Boris Johnson said, no, she didn't, it's fine. And
didn't he say, this is where we all get behind the Pritster?
Yes, yep, get behind the Pritster, yep. And, you know, defend the Pritster because she's such an important and capable and safe pair of hands in the government that he couldn't bear to lose her. Anyway, this year, all this eventually went to court, and while Priti Patel maintains that she certainly didn't bully him, or at least didn't mean to bully him, and it was completely unintentional, he's still been given £340,000. Now, I'm prepared...
That's a costly mistake.
I'm prepared to get bullied by Priti Patel for a lot less than that.
Well, you say that, Hugo.
No,
I
swear.
You don't know how bad it gets.
I mean, depending on how often I have to put myself through this, if it was like a monthly appointment, I would be prepared to do it for a tenth of that in a year, I would say.
Really? What, so 12 appointments?
12 appointments, yep.
Where she just ripped you to shreds for, let's say, what, 45 minutes?
Yep, sure. Where she sort of peers... I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was Michael Deacon in The Telegraph once talked about Francois Hollande as being one of the few men in the world who could loom up at people, right? And because generally you can only loom down at people, but he can loom up, and Priti Patel can loom up.
Yes, I reckon she can loom up as well.
I don't think a day goes by on my Twitter feed where there isn't a. I used to work with Priti Patel, and I didn't let her come to any meetings because she was dangerous. That's basically just like the sort of the vibe, isn't it?
Yeah. So I love the fact I didn't bully him. If I did, I didn't mean it. It's just my horrible personality. Yeah. And this is discrimination if you decide to find me guilty.
Yes, I thought he was joking as he lay on the floor with the blood coming out of his ears. That didn't happen. Don't sue me, Priti Patel.
Do you know, I feel like I'm now slightly worried about you willingly wanting to be bullied once a month for money.
For money? But no, sorry, it's not just for money, Emily. It's for a lot of money.
Okay, sorry. Yes, that's true. 340,000.
Do you think there's a corporate service to be offered whereby you get some psychopath sitting in the home office? Yes, in the corner office or in the big job, or, you know, I didn't quite know what to say. And you could provide people to go in and be pummeled, you know, verbally, emotionally, spiritually. And, it would get all the bully energy out. Then they'd be safe.
What? So you could teaching your staff resilience?
Rent a victim, basically.
Yes. Oh, rent a victim.
Yeah. No, it's not your staff.
Oh, I see.
It's an outsider. It's a victim consultant who comes in and goes, all right, you got an hour. Like you make a child run around to burn off energy.
Oh, I see.
Or like you make Dylan the dog hump its teddy before the Queen comes to visit.
So what would you rather, be bullied by Priti Patel or humped by Dylan Johnson?
Humped by Dylan Johnson. I think Priti Patel is absolutely chillingly terrifying.
I sort of think that I could put up with being bullied by Priti Patel for money, whereas if I was being humped by the Prime Minister's dog for money, that would feel like a career change. No?
Yes.
I know what
it
you
would
mean.
Feel like a career change.
What's next, Hugo?
Okay, so August, Afghanistan fell. Terrible, awful, in no way amusing or something one should be lighthearted about. Except Dominic Raab was at the time in Crete on a beach. And
on a paddleboard.
Well, this is the thing. Everyone was saying, why didn't you go home and handle this? Why were you hanging out on the beach? Why were you paddleboarding? And he said, I was not paddleboarding. I was working. And anyway, the sea was closed. And the sea was closed it's just an amazing sentence. The sea was closed. I mean, firstly, how did he know the sea was closed if he was working so hard? And secondly, what's a closed sea? Can you close the sea?
Priti Patel has tried.
Well, it's like, yeah, standing on the beach, ordering the sea. I mean, I know what he means. He means you weren't allowed to paddleboard. The fact that he noticed is obviously suspicious. But just, I don't know, the sea was, it goes round and round in my head. The sea was closed.
And it feels like sort of like bad Ernest Hemingway.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Maybe Ernest Hemingway had that line somewhere and then just rejected it.
The old man stared at the sea. The sea was closed.
Close what? To him.
The Iron Man stood on the edge of the cliff. The sea was closed. Oh my goodness.
The sea was closed.
Yes, when a toddler says something and you say, like, that's unexpectedly profound.
Yeah. But you can imagine in all kinds of, like, you can have it on your gravestone. The sea was closed.
He's had some extraordinary moments, Dominic Raab, hasn't he? The only person I will kneel for is my wife.
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah. Poof. Yeah.
Emily doesn't remember that.
No, I do. Yeah.
Taking the knee.
Well, yeah, no.
Firstly, he thought taking the knee was from Game of Thrones, which is like, dude, man, like, what?
That's on a par with the Mexican Coke.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm just I was just trying to visualise, like, what he means, like, in devotion to his
proposing.
Wife. Proposing.
So just the once. I'm a man who will not kneel for anyone.
Apart from my wife.
Once.
Oh.
Once.
Okay.
Yeah, the sea was closed. It just goes round and round in my head. I can't stop, you know.
I feel like this should be the title of your next book.
I'm thinking that since I've taken up needlepoint, because I'm 300 years old, I might do a cushion for you. Would you like that?
Yeah, which says the sea was closed.
Oh, yes, the sea was closed. Oh, yes,
that would be
always,
completely
yes,
gorgeous.
Yes, never is forget.
Is this like cross stitch?
Yes.
Yeah. So my wife Fran, who you both know, sort of became a keen cross stitcher at the start of the pandemic. But what that meant, she bought a cross stitch thing to do, which says on it, "Think happy thoughts." Now, think happy thoughts is a fuck of a lot to cross stitch, and it's basically taken her the entire pandemic until now, and she's halfway through the last word.
Oh, you might get it framed for Christmas.
Well, no, there's no way. I mean, it's going to be June before she's finished it. But it's been this sort of thing we used to joke when it was taking us so long that, like, ha ha ha, like, your cross stitch will be finished before this pandemic's over. And now it's like, oh God, you know, even though it's going to have been 3 years or whatever, it might even be true. Yeah.
Also, I feel like, sorry, but I feel like that's quite a sort of Priti Patel statement. It's like, think happy thoughts.
Yes.
I don't give a fuck about your actual thoughts. Just think happy ones. This is what we need you to do. Like, it's not like particularly conducive to relaxation.
Unlike the sea was closed.
God. Dominic Raab. More.
Okay. Let's see what we've got. I've got another three for you. Which one should I get first? Dominic Cummings. Other Dominic. Dominic Cummings just sort of going rogue generally. It's last year, believe it or not, that he resigned. Although it seems like only yesterday. But it was this year that he started tweeting and blogging and giving interviews. The first interview he gave, whenever it was, I forget, was when he talked about how he had, for a while after the election, plotted to oust Boris Johnson as Prime Minister with his many friends. Now, the thing I love about this is nobody knows who these friends are, and there's a strong suspicion that they are imaginary. And I just really like the idea of Dominic Cummings and his imaginary friends thinking they're running the country.
He does feel like someone sitting there at his desk going, "What do you think? What do you think?"
Muttering his hoodie.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I wonder if this happened. Maybe he's speaking. Maybe it's the sort of the ghosts of kind of past leaders or kind of historical figures he admires that speak to him.
The way he talks about it is like, yes, there was a circle of people within Downing Street, and it sounds really important. And then you're like, hang on, I do know roughly who you're talking about. You're talking about that 17-year-old kid who worked for Vote Leave, and that and that sort of that mad old Tory who shouts at cows and thinks, you know, I mean, it's like a, you know, it's a sort of collection of completely crazy people that he's sort of portraying as the Bilderberg Group. And I love the grandiosity of it.
I think part of his grandiosity was the fact that he always looked so sort of run over and falling apart when he went in. I think the more powerful you want people to think you are, the more you dress down. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what people wear, but even I found myself thinking, put on a suit, for God's sake.
Or just a shirt.
Just a shirt.
Yeah.
I liked it when he said, when he leaked, you know, Boris saying, "All I want to do is write my Shakespeare book. I'm bored of all this. I need to make some money. I want to go write." And then all hell broke loose, really. It's like we didn't lock down because Boris was writing his Shakespeare book because he can't afford his, you know, unidentified number of children.
But the Cummings story generally, it goes so close to the heart of what's going on with the Johnson government from the start, because, like, they all knew Dominic Cummings. He'd been around a while. You know, David Cameron refused to let him become a special advisor because he thought he was a nutter. You know, I mean, this is virtually on the record. And so Boris Johnson brings him into government. Eventually, he completely betrays Boris Johnson. He now refers to Johnson as the shopping trolley crashing down the aisle in a supermarket, which is a decent enough metaphor. And he blogs. I think he's got a Substack now, and he blogs, and he just sort of spills the beans. And you just kind of think, well, who could have seen this coming except everybody?
Who could have seen Cummings coming?
Yeah.
I don't want to say I told you so, but holy hell, what were you thinking?
I like the fact that anybody doing anything that they shouldn't do in our household is now called go doing a Barnard Castle. it's brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for that.
What's he going to do next, Dominic Cummings? What do you think is going to happen to him, Hugo?
He'll keep on blogging. And I have a degree of admiration for Dominic Cummings because he doesn't mess around. And what he hasn't done, which he could have done post-Brexit, is just go to America and be mad there instead, but for much, much more money. You know, he could have gone to, he could be advising the crazy, you know, the craziest bits of the Republican Party, and probably earning loads and being one of these people who, you know, appears on Fox and sets up polling companies and does all that kind of stuff. And he's like, he's got this position. No, they're crazy and I don't want to work with them. You know, so he does believe himself to be doing the right thing. And he's quite an interesting futuristic thinker, but just so vicious and unreliable. And, you know, I mean, you wouldn't want to have to rely on him in any sort of way. He's a dangerous person.
Would you accept large amounts of money to go and be bullied by Dominic Cummings for an hour a month?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think he'd be a very good bully. You know, I think see, Priti Patel's probably got this thing as a bully, which is a kind of complete sort of gimlet-eyed sort of lunacy kind of thing that she's not really going to understand. She'll have no idea of who to bully and who not to bully, and no concept of status. She probably bullies furniture. You know, she'll shout at anything. Whereas Cummings, I think, would only really bully somebody who was definitely sure he could get away with bullying. If you see what I mean. And I think a man of about his own age, he's not going to bully.
But he might just talk about you behind your back with his many friends.
Yes, although that's literally what we're doing about him right now, so that's fine.
Yes, sorry.
With his many imaginary friends.
Yeah, exactly. His imaginary friends will come and get you. Yeah, no, like I said, I do sort of slightly admire him while sort of being very glad he's not getting anything to do with politics anymore ever again, hopefully.
Well, see, you know, I didn't know about the David Cameron not wanting to work with him. So from my point of view, he just appeared out of nowhere, this sort of Svengali figure. I thought, oh, my God, it's Boris's Peter Mandelson.
Is he
a genius?
Well, so he was basically, he was Michael Gove's sidekick at the Department of Education for a long time, but Gove wanted to bring him into, I can't remember where it was, and Cameron ruled out. Before that, he was involved in the AV referendum, and he was involved in some Keep the Pound thing long, long ago. So he's been on the scene for quite a long time with a reputation for just being sort of one of the nutters, really. But a very effective nutter, and you know he's a good campaigner. I mean, he won a referendum and he won an election. You know,
I think people will buy his book.
Yeah, although you don't need to because his blog posts are like 40,000 words long. So
it's true. He's already serialized it, basically all the good bits.
What's, as long as there's a really good editor, it might be just about.
What's your penultimate moment for us?
My penultimate moment. Okay, Labour finally. Angela Rayner. When she called the Tories scum September, she said, and what I liked about this was how brazenly unapologetic she was. firstly, it was the second time she'd called the Tories scum, because she called them scum last October and then apologised for it and then did it again. And then her defence for calling Tories scum was, but they're scum, Angela Rayner is just this sort of like amazing figure who is she could bully you if you set your mind to it. You know, she's like, what, she's a sort of 39-year-old grandmother. She doesn't mess around. She's had a rough life. Everyone in Labour is sort of terrified of her.
Yeah, imagine putting her and Priti Patel in the ring. I mean, my money would be on Angela.
Oh hell yes. Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, yeah. She can loom down.
And she can loom in every direction. And she is a believer, and she truly believes with every fibre of her being that the Tory party are scum.
Yes.
So, you know, if she apologises, I mean, fine, that's happened. What are we meant to do with that?
Yeah. No, and I think it was... And actually, there's a, you know, there's a strong constituency for the Labour Party of people who think the Tories are scum and don't want to say sorry about it. You know, and people... And she kind of... her role in Labour... Well, her role in Labour could be... It isn't, because her and Keir Starmer don't appear to get on, which I think is a mistake on both their...
Yes, I agree.
Because they need each other, and they're not politically all that different. Because it's Angela Rayner, she's not a sort of far left Corbyn headbanger at all. You know, she's relatively moderate. But her role is supposed to be a kind of sort of Prescott role, John Prescott role, as in she says all the things that the leader doesn't want to say, so the leader can appeal to moderates, and she goes, no, they're scum, you know. And she's actually quite good at that. But yeah, no, I think she's sort of terrifying and fascinating.
Yes, because when someone said, you know, I can't remember what you said, calling the Tories scum is unhelpful, she was like, yeah, what's your point?
Yeah. I know. I think probably we should be a little bit more Angela Rayner. Like, I spent my whole t-shirts. Time apologising.
What would Angela Rayner do?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we should think about this. No, because, I mean, I would apologise immediately before I even said
you
Tory
would
Scum.
Exactly. You're constantly apologising.
I would have said, I'm sorry, I'm going to say Tory Scum. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Yeah, exactly.
But you also probably wouldn't fundamentally believe that certain groups of people are scum. You know, I mean, which
yes,
is the
because
thing.
The implication wasn't the current Tories are scum. There's definitely a massive argument for that. It's every Tory that's ever lived and ever will live is inevitably scum, right?
And it wasn't even that they're behaving like scum. It was that they actually are scum.
Yeah, genetically scum.
Yeah, this sort of irredeemable group of people.
We're almost incredibly sadly at the end. So, you know, as someone said to Dylan the dog, finish us off, Hugo.
Okay, this one, I maybe should have done this one higher up. It's probably not the best to end on, but let's end with it anyway. This was Gavin Williamson. Not when he finally was sacked for sort of kind of being rubbish, but this was when it was shortly before that, where he gave an interview to the Evening Standard and he talked about having the time he was on a Zoom call with Marcus Rashford. And he'd actually been on a Zoom, Marcus Rashford, the footballer, and he'd actually been on a Zoom call with Mauro Itoje, the rugby player.
Oh, God.
Two people who have basically nothing in common with each other except for their skin colour. And it was a kind of, wow. I mean, that was like you've really, I mean, especially Marcus Rashford, one of the most famous people in the country.
Yeah.
For how long Gavin Williamson had gone through life believing that he'd spoken to this man when in fact they never had. It was just, and Williamson was this amazing figure. Like, you look at the government now and the government doesn't sort of necessarily seem to be doing splendidly, but actually the sort of implied level of competence has kind of rocketed with the people we've been talking about, the slight sidelining of Dominic Raab and the sacking of Gavin Williamson. You know, Williamson, he was the education secretary throughout the pandemic, and as schools fell apart, he embarked upon this cunning plan to do fuck all. And kept doing it.
And they
it
was, kept not sacking him.
Do you
they
think
kept not
they
him?
Deliberately kept Matt Hancock and Gavin Williamson almost to like sort of pull focus from
decoys?
Yes, exactly. Like, well, so that people could go, oh, he's such...
It's
he's,
all your fault.
Exactly. For a long time while they tried to sort of sort everything out.
It's an unpopular view, but I don't think they're necessarily similar. I think Hancock was not always that honest about what was going on and what he was capable of doing. There was a lot of lies and waffle spoken about PPE and so on. But I do think he was broadly competent, at least compared to everybody else.
Right.
Whereas Williamson was just a disaster.
He'd been disastrous before he became education secretary, hadn't he?
Yes. Oh, yes. And he was a disastrous defence secretary, not for very long.
Yeah.
And he was the thing about Gavin Williamson is he has a sort of high status within the party because he was... He was kind of sort of he was a sort of Theresa May's bruiser for a while, and then he helped Boris Johnson enormously within the party when he became prime minister, and because he was chief whip, which he likes, so he's quite a good player in the sort of internal mechanics of the party.
But no one's ever accused him of being talented, right?
Well, I mean, I guess he's talented at that.
Yeah,
you know, he's probably talented at playing off various factions against each other. And there
yes,
is this
because
assumption.
He's like a sneaky sort of. Sorry, he really gets my goat. But you feel like he's on.
Yeah, you've always hated him.
Yes, I have always hated him. But it's sort of that
he did something that really pissed you off a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I can't remember what it is. There you go. So that's annoying. Sorry. What did he do that pissed me off a few years ago, Hugo?
What did he do?
He did something unforgivable.
So he posed for a photo shoot with a whip on his desk to remind people he'd been chief whip.
Oh my God.
I mean, this is like sort of sub Da Vinci Code levels of symbolism, right? So he did that.
Yeah, move over, and Dan Brown.
He was fond of saying you and whose army when he was defence secretary, which is just like shut up. He had a tarantula.
Yeah, the tarantula was bad. I think it might have been that they should just go away, but I can't remember who it was. The Russians.
He said the Russians should shut up and go away.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's like from Russia to Russia. What?
Be specific, Gavin.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Thank you for talking us through your top moments and not mentioning the word Brexit.
Well, you just said it.
Did I not?
I know, I just said it. But I mean, I'm so grateful that you didn't mention the word Brexit because, my God.
I must have just forgotten. I should have done.
Well, let's all forget because it's nearly Christmas.
Yes, exactly. And what kind of Christmas are we going to have?
A little dreary, but probably not like last year's, right?
Chance of snow. Something, something.
Chance of Mexican Coke.
Flurries.
Oh my God, Hugo, thank you so much for coming to see us. And we're going to force you to come back very soon.
Exactly, to tell us what else we should know.
Yes, exactly, because we can't do anything except watch Selling Sunset and stare at the wall right now. Oh my God. So thank you so, so much, and we will see you very soon.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Annabel Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Mid-Alt. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.
And we'll just leave you with this thought. Never in the history of calming down has telling someone to calm down calmed them down.